Hi, good morning. This is Diana Previs with Happy Gut Healthy Lives. Today joining me is Dr. Will Cole. He is a leading functional medicine practitioner in Pittsburgh. He is an expert in understanding the underlying factors in thyroid issues, autoimmune, hormonal dysfunctions, and more. Thank you, Dr. Cole, for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, there's so many questions. I was so excited about this interview to ask you. But first, I'd like to know a little bit about your background. How did you come into functional medicine?
Yeah, so my doctorate is Southern California University of Health Sciences in Los Angeles. And it's sort of this mecca of alternative health and wellness. And there's MDs and DCs and LACs and naturopaths all sort of at this school in Southern California. And I had heard of a guy called Datish Karazian, who had gone to my school, was older than I was, and I was talking about this thing called functional medicine. This was years ago. And I thought, okay, what is this? I looked into it, and I've kind of never looked back since. It's really been amazing to see what functional medicine can do, not only in my life, my family's life, but and now, I mean, I'm based in Pittsburgh, but about 80% of my patients are in other states and countries. We mainly have a virtual functional medicine practice via webcam consultation. And, you know, to see what this has done, it's just on such a huge level today. It's really amazing. Now the Cleveland Clinic has a functional medicine center. I mean, it's just our field is just doing so many amazing things. So it kind of was an organic process of being interested in health, and then not knowing how I was going to really manifest that in someone's life. But I really feel like functional medicine is the perfect fit for me, and it's perfect fit for really anybody going through a chronic health problem that's doing everything their doctor is telling them to do and is immersed in Dr. Google and trying to find things out on their own. But despite their best efforts, they're still struggling with these health issues. So it's, you know, it's the marrying the best of Western medicine, which is evidence-based and labs and knowing from an objective standpoint what's going on here, and then the best of alternative health, which is actually getting somebody healthy and not just covering up symptoms with pharmaceutical drugs with potential side effects. So it really is the alchemy of the both worlds that is functional medicine.
I truly understand and appreciate that. I have a long lineage in my family of autoimmune issues, and my sister had juvenile diabetes. There was RA. So I think that this is really on the rise. I worked in advocacy for a major cancer hospital, but I'd want you to expand a little bit more about the difference, because I don't think that people really understand the difference between functional medicine and conventional medicine. So if you could just really lay that groundwork, the differences between the two type of practices.
Sure. If I had to boil it down to the main differences between functional medicine and, you know, mainstream or conventional medicine, is number one, we interpret labs using a thinner reference range. So anybody that's listening will know when they get their labs done from their general doctor or their PCP, they'll have their number and then they'll have this reference range, this sort of X to Y normal range, so to speak. Well, we get that range from a statistical bell curve average of the population of that specific lab. If you go to another lab location, you may find that reference range will vary from lab to lab. Then you kind of have to ask the question, who are the people that typically go to labs? They're people with health problems. So there's a lot of people that are like, okay, let's have these labs ran, and because I don't feel well, or I'm going through these health issues, I don't know what's going on here, I want to find out. And the labs largely or entirely come back, quote unquote, normal, even though the patient's like, heck, I don't feel normal. But they're told everything's fine, the labs are fine, you're just depressed, here's an antidepressant, or, you know, you're just getting older, or you just need to lose weight, or all of these well-intentioned reasons as to why somebody could be having symptoms despite normal labs. But what they're unintentionally being told is that they're a lot like the other sick people that make up the population of that reference range. So in functional medicine, we take people with health problems out of that reference range, and we're comparing your labs to optimal health. And that is the functional range, where your body is functioning the best, you're thriving, that's optimal wellness. And that's typically a much tighter range of numbers within the larger reference range of where the body is functioning the best, where we get our name, functional medicine, is that's where it derives from. And then the second thing we do differently in functional medicine is we run more comprehensive labs. So we do a really comprehensive health history, and we want to find out, okay, what labs are the most relevant to the case? We don't want to be just flippant with labs and be excessive with labs, but we want to be smart. We want to be comprehensive. We want to get to these root causes of why somebody's going through what they're going through. So whatever's relevant to the case, but things like microbiome issues or toxicity or hormonal imbalances or nutrient deficiencies or methylation issues, all of these issues that are beyond the superficial label of conventional medicine, which is diagnose a disease, match it with a medication. So these labs that we run in functional medicine are superfluous to the conventional medicine because the end result is still going to be the medication. So if it's not going to change the treatment outcome, why would they run these labs in functional medicine to find out why they need to be on the medication in the first place, which, you know, nobody is sick from a medication deficiency. So we want to say, okay, if you want to put somebody on whatever, the thyroid medication or the anti-inflammatory, well, what is the root cause for that thyroid problem or that inflammatory issue or whatever problem we're talking about? So these are the pieces to the puzzle, to their health puzzle. And then the third thing we do differently in functional medicine is we run more comprehensive labs, as you mentioned, but the third is really realizing we're all different. So there's not a cookie cutter, one size fits all approach to getting well. And what works for one person may not work for the next person, or what works for one person can flare the next person up, even with healthy things. I've seen everything under the sun work good for one person, and then the next things flare the next person up. So I try not to have a bias as, you know, this is the way that everybody with whatever health problem we're talking about should do their life, because I'll be proven wrong with the next patient. So I have to look at them as an individual and look at what works in their life and what doesn't, and use real life as a lab in addition to the lab, in addition to the health history, to really be tailored to the individual. So we use food as medicine, which is, it's the opposite of conventional medicine, where they say most of the time food has nothing to do with our health. That's how archaic that system is. But every food is going to feed disease or fight it. It's going to feed health or tear it down. But most of our patients are doing way more and eating way better than the average American, but despite their best efforts, they're still struggling with these health issues. They are beyond, you know, don't eat McDonald's, but they are doing all the good things that they've read online and have learned about, but they still are struggling. So how do we go beyond that? How can we take this to the next level and get to these root causes? So we use food as medicine in really targeted ways. We use herbal botanical medicines in really targeted ways. And then non-food stuff like stress management protocols, sleep, physical activity, and medications when needed to really be tailored to the individual. That's my long-winded sermon.
Yeah. And I wanted to, Ian, you jump. There's so much I want to ask you. You mentioned about the microbiome, and that's what this summit is all about, is how to heal our gut. And can you help us to understand how our gut and what we feed into it, how it affects people when they're trying to lose weight, and if they can't lose weight, what are the reasons behind it? There's so many different things that point to issues where the gut is you have to heal the gut in order for everything to function properly. So I'll let you go ahead and run with that for a few minutes. And yeah, giving your thoughts.
For sure. Yeah, it is foundational. It is a major facet to many people. And I think that's maybe one of the judgments that, or critiques that people in outside of functional medicine say about us in functional medicine. They say, well, everything, you think everything's the gut now. It's just like what you think. But it's really not that. It is just a major piece of the puzzle for so many people. And it is so robustly researched in the medical literature that it would be lazy to not rule it out. It would be doing wrong for the patient to at least to see for sure if it's an issue or not. And if you don't know if it's an issue if you're not looking there. And I think most of the time we're dealing with a microbiome component, if not a huge piece of the puzzle. It is a facet to someone's health, and it's one that's largely overlooked. So I'm so happy you're having this event and this raising awareness of the microbiome. So I am a self-professed microbiome nerd. So I could talk about this forever, just like I talk about functional medicine. But it's basically, you know, the trillions of bacteria in our gut, which all of your listeners are going to know that already. But it's upwards of 100 trillion bacteria, depending on the study that you look at. And you have about 10 trillion. We all have about 10 trillion human cells. So we are all about 10 times more bacteria than human, a sort of sophisticated host for the microbiome. And our gut, and Hippocrates said thousands of years ago, all disease begins in the gut. And now really research is catching up with antiquity, that about 90% of chronic diseases that we see today, at least to some degree, begin in the gut, if not entirely. So if it's that high, we should be looking there. And the reason why these gut issues, these underlying microbiome issues are not looked at largely in conventional medicine is because there's no medication for it. But once there's a medication for it, I promise you, everyone will be tested for underlying gut issues. And they are working on some intestinal permeability medications as we speak. But for now, it's superfluous. It's not going to change the medication, so they're going to give the medications that are on the market currently. But from a functional medicine standpoint, understanding the root cause of why someone's going through what they're going through really determines how we support them and how we deal with these underlying root issues, which, and what we're talking about today, is the gut. And you don't, and I think this is important to understand, is that you don't necessarily have to have digestive symptoms that have underlying gut problems. Many people may find that they're going to the restroom fine, they're going to the bathroom fine, they don't really even associate their health problems with a gut issue, but there's latent underlying microbiome dysfunctions that are having far-reaching implications, the ripple effect in other parts of the body, because going back to what Hippocrates said, all disease begins in the gut. So I would say, not all of them, but a lot of them do. And I would say most of them at least have a microbiome component to them. So microbiome imbalances, dysbioses, or yeast and fungal overgrowth, SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, histamine intolerance, and of course, leaky gut syndrome or intestinal permeability. These are all things that you can measure on a lab. So these aren't up for debate. This is not a belief system. This isn't a religion. This is your body creating antibodies to clutin and zonulin, the proteins that govern gut lining permeability? Is your body creating antibodies against lipopolysaccharides, LPS, the gram-negative negative bacteria endotoxins that are linked to fueling inflammation throughout the body and the brain and systemically? So this is just us looking from a functional medicine perspective. Is the microbiome, is your gut a component to why you're going through what you're going through? And because it's 75% of the immune system, it's linked to underlying autoimmune issues, seen as a precondition by some researchers to autoimmunity, and your gut is your second brain. So 95% of our serotonin is made in the gut, stored in the gut, and those lipopolysaccharides that I mentioned that can pass through the gut lining in the case of leaky gut syndrome is implicated in different brain inflammatory issues. As someone could have leaky gut syndrome, they could have leaky brain syndrome, basically increased blood-brain barrier permeability that's associated with a whole host of inflammatory brain issues like depression and anxiety and brain fog and fatigue and ADHD and ADD and autism. So these are things that are far more far-reaching than just I have digestive symptoms, which is certainly important, and I don't want to undermine the people that are going through digestive issues, because that is a big problem for many people with inflammatory bowel issues and IBS and constipation and all of these things are serious. But it's not just that. It's not just relegated to digestion. It is the impact that it has on the brain, has on our hormones, and has on our immune system. So I don't know if that answered your question, but that's what we're talking about when we talk about the microbiome.
Well, no, I think you actually answered three of the questions I was going to ask you. So you're rather intuitive. What types of diseases have you seen on the rise as a result of the food that Americans are eating?
And I think this is a really fascinating topic, is because researchers are really looking at the mismatch between our world, which changed over a very short period of time, very dramatically over a very short period of time, and our DNA, which hasn't changed in about 10,000 years. So this mismatch between the sort of brave new world and our DNA, which is relatively untouched in 10,000 years, is really at the heart of some studies looking at what is the facets to triggering chronic health problems that we see today. So I would say number one is something we kind of opened the conversation with, is autoimmune diseases. And that's the people I have a heart for, the people that I spend most of my time with on the ground kind of dealing with these issues. There's upwards of 50 million Americans that have an autoimmune disease, and millions more that are somewhere on the autoimmune inflammation spectrum. They are not bad enough to be diagnosed with an ICD-10 code, but they are struggling with inflammatory issues. So there's this whole thing called the autoimmune inflammation spectrum, where you have silent autoimmunity on the one side, meaning maybe they would have positive antibodies, but they're not really noticing any symptoms. And then you have stage two on the spectrum called autoimmune reactivity. And those people are having symptoms, but they're not bad enough to be full-blown stage three, which is the autoimmune disease itself. And that is a criteria that modern medicine has put on it. It's just, they'll say, well, your body's destroyed enough of itself in the section, so we're going to call it this. And there's over 100 different autoimmune diseases today, and that number will only continue to grow as we understand how different diseases work. And then in addition to the 100, there's another 40 that have at least an autoimmune component to them. So we're dealing with 140 issues that we know today that have an autoimmune component or a full-blown autoimmune disease. But the problem with these issues is that by the time they're diagnosable, there's been significant amount of destruction done. So, for example, there has to be about 90% destruction of the adrenal glands before it's bad enough, or they'll say, well, this is Addison's disease or autoimmune adrenal disease. There has to be about 70% destruction of the myelin sheath before it shows up on an imaging study and they say, well, this is MS. And about similar numbers, like 80% destruction of the villi in the digestive system before they'll say, okay, it shows up in a biopsy and then say, you have celiac disease. And this goes on and on for all those other 140 issues, is that there's significant destruction before they say, this is whatever disease it is. Those things didn't happen overnight. On average, it's 10 years prior to the diagnosis when these things are brewing, when inflammation is rising, when the immune system starts turning against different parts of your body and attacking it. This is autoimmunity. So it's not just the people that are diagnosable, but it's the people somewhere on this inflammatory continuum. That's the problem, is that these people that are in autoimmune reactivity are in this sort of conventional healthcare purgatory where they have no home. They're told, well, it looks autoimmune. Come back when your body's basically when you're sick enough so we can label you with lupus or something like this, and then we'll give you a steroid or an immunosuppressant biologic drug, with which anybody on those medications will tell you this is no panacea of, like, you know, this utopian magic cure when you're on these drugs. This is a problem, and those drugs have potential side effects, and they honestly are not long-term solutions for people. And they're just shoving the immune system down to against the attack. It's not actually dealing with the root cause of why someone's going through this problem in the first place. So what sense does it make to wait till our body's destroyed enough of it to then say, okay, let's put you on steroids now. It's bad enough. But, I mean, what can you do today to take responsibility for your health and do everything that you can to mitigate the risk factors, to dampen the inflammation, or to, like we're talking about on this event, to heal your gut, or whatever's needed. So this is really what I see the most clinically, and definitely what I have a passion for.
Right. And in terms of what people can do right now, today, because the listeners that are listening today are going to be all at different levels. They're going to be diagnosed. They're going to have symptoms. They're going to be told that they're feeling that there's something wrong with them. Their labs are going to come up normal. What can we do right now today as a process to help in that area, to help heal and reduce our stress and heal the gut and optimize our weight? What suggestions would you think would be optimal for a person starting right where they're at?
I would say ground zero, and maybe it's something that's so obvious but yet understated, is that no matter where you're at on this health journey, and again, most of my patients are eating way better than the average American by the time they're getting to us. They know a lot. But then there are some people, obviously, I think, that are listening now, maybe for the first time, they're even hearing about this stuff. I would say wherever you're at, you should not stress, because stress is not good for your health. And no, this is easier said than done. If you're going through health issues, it's way easier said than done. But what I mean by that is that you cannot just, what happens is people get overwhelmed with information, and then it's paralysis of analysis, and they just feel defeated, and they're like, what the heck? I don't even know what I should do. They feel very disillusioned. So I think that it's almost good to start with making a list of the things you're learning at this event right now, making a list of some things that resonate with you and what you want to find out. That way you have it down on paper. It's not like up in your head and you're stressing about it, but it's like, okay, I learned this, or I learned this, and I learned this. And these are the things that I want to look into more. It's something that's written down and you can keep it organized. And I think from there I'm not being biased here, but I just see the impact that has on people's lives, is get a qualified functional medicine practitioner. Because if you're going through a health issue, you should get a baseline and not worry about things for the sake of it, because it may not even be relevant to you, but you only know if you look there. And I think labs and a comprehensive health history can do a lot for giving you your baseline, which is not going to be the next person's baseline. And then you know what you even needed to address, because maybe SIBO isn't your thing. Maybe you think, well, it looks like SIBO, but you don't know for sure unless you test. And just because, and SIBO is malintestinal bacterial overgrowth, it's a gut issue. But my point is, you can apply that to any thing we're talking about here. And it's that, okay, well, what's needed for you? So you can have logical action steps to deal with what's relevant to you. So I think that's, it's not so easy, like, well, stop eating junk food. I think we're beyond that. I think it's like, well, what's relevant for me? What do I need to fix? What's my health puzzle? And I think labs can really illuminate what's relevant to the individual.
Absolutely. And I've worked with many patients that were, you know, there's nothing worse than feeling that you're in the dark about what's going on with your body, because yeah, you know that there's things there, and then you're going to a physician and he's telling you that there's nothing wrong with you, but you know that there's something wrong with you. So the other topic that I wanted to ask you briefly, and then I want to get on and see about what you're doing now, and I want you want to tell everyone involved about your book. But there's a whole buzz out there about, why can't I lose weight? Can you touch on that for a few minutes, about people that are going to the gym, working out, and yet they can't lose the weight that they want?
Yeah, sure. So the gut is a player there for many people. So things like leaky gut syndrome or intestinal permeability, things are passing through the gut that shouldn't be able to pass through the gut. So undigested food proteins can cause the immune system to create antibodies, create inflammation, and then you have something called molecular mimicry, and this creates more inflammation in the body. So this is intestinal permeability. Leaky gut syndrome is linked to weight loss resistance. So that is one component related to the microbiome that is interesting for anybody that's struggling with weight gain or weight loss resistance. And then dysbiosis in the microbiome. So colonies of bacteria are linked to people more prone to losing weight, more prone to having trouble losing weight. And then the impact that inflammation can have. And inflammation, I just say gut-centric inflammation, or gut or inflammation originating from underlying gut issues, can impact the brain, which instructs the endocrine system, your hormonal system, in many ways. So we have to look at you have what's called the gut-brain axis, but then the gut-brain axis, or the link, because your gut and brain are formed from the same fetal tissue. So when you babies are growing in their mom's womb, the gut and brain are formed from the same fetal tissue. It's referred to as the second brain in the medical literature. We talked previously about serotonin, the 95% of that's made and stored in the microbiome in the gastrointestinal system. So then we're looking at the gut-brain connection there. But then also, if the gut-brain connection is impacted in some way negatively, what impact is that having on the brain hormonal system? Or more specifically, the hypothalamic pituitary thyroid axis, adrenal axis, and ovarian axis. So I think that this is a component here where is there something to be said for underlying gut issues impacting the gut-brain connection and therefore impacting the brain hormonal axis. And at that point, you can measure these downstream ripple effects that these underlying gut issues can play a part in impacting. So measuring the thyroid, which makes it difficult to lose weight beyond just TSH and T4. A full thyroid panel is going to be a lot more than that. So measuring thyroid antibodies, looking at Hashimoto's, looking at reverse T3, because in states of inflammation, your body can shunt more of the T4 to T3 conversion into reverse T3, which makes it really difficult to lose weight because it acts like T3, but you have too much of this unusable form of T3, which makes it difficult to lose weight. And this is all as a result of inflammation. And then you can measure leptin, which is a hormone that your fat cells produce. You can summon in states of inflammation in their brain, hypothalamic cells of the brain that can have a leptin resistance, which is another hormonal resistance pattern. I mean, there's a lot of things. And obviously, cortisol issues with HPA axis or adrenal fatigue issues. These are some things that make it incredibly difficult to lose weight. And someone, if someone's doing everything right and on paper and they are having an extra difficult time losing weight or keeping it off, they should look at these underlying gut issues, but also these brain hormonal issues that make it are a major impediment to people losing weight.
Well, that is amazing. I know we're gonna have to end soon, but I really wanted to get to what you're up to now and the book that you've got coming out. So please share with us about this exciting new venture.
Yeah, so there's a lot of exciting things coming up. Everything's at drwillcole.com. That's drwillcole.com. And we have video classes that are live right now. We have a new curated natural medicine line that I'm very excited about that is out very soon. And I also have the book that you mentioned that is published with Penguin Random House. It's called Ketotarian. It's sort of a plant-based ketogenic health book. It's sort of the amalgamation of the best of the ketogenic diet and the best of the plant-based diet. So I show all the science behind it, and then we have lots of really yummy recipes and good, you know, pretty pictures and all that good stuff. But that's coming out August 28th, but it's on pre-order now on Amazon, and it's called Ketotarian.
And the wonderful thing about you is that you do international consultations, phone consultations. You're global. You're all over the map. So if anyone wants to get a consultation from you, how should they just go to your website and there's quick access?
Yeah, we offer free webcam and phone health evaluations with my team to kind of see if a consultation with me would be appropriate. So all the consultations are with me. And but we don't want to waste anybody's time. So if you want to get a functional medicine perspective on your case, we offer a free health evaluation via phone and webcam to talk a little bit about your case, see if functional medicine is right for you. And then, yeah, we would just coordinate and getting you set up for that. And we're used to this. So we are patients around the world. We'll take all the guesswork out of it for you, and we'll be a support system.
Thank you so much for joining us today. You've been such an enlightenment for everyone. We'll see you tomorrow. This is Happy Gut, Healthy Lives. All right? Take care. Bye-bye.